All right, so you're in law school, right?
Yeah.
Which means you're wading through a ton of cases and trying to figure out which ones are the real game changers.
Yeah.
Well, today we're going to zero in on one that you definitely want to have on your radar, Brangen v. Commonwealth.
Yeah, 2017 case out of the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court.
That's the one, and it really shook things up when it comes to setting bail.
Mm.
Especially, you know, for defendants who don't exactly have a fortune sitting around.
Right. It's this really interesting clash between, like, the ideals of our justice system and then the nitty-gritty of how things actually play out. You know, like, we say someone is innocent until proven guilty, but then what happens when someone can't even afford to get out of jail before their trial even starts?
It's kind of a big problem, right? And Brangen really tried to tackle that head on. So before we get too deep into the legal weeds, let's lay out the story of Jamal Brangen. So picture this. It's 2014, and Brangen gets arrested. The charges are serious armed robbery while masked. But here's a piece of the puzzle that you absolutely can't ignore. At the time of this arrest, Brangen was already on probation because of prior convictions for child rape.
Okay, so already a complicated situation.
Exactly, and it gets more complex. Initially, the Superior Court sets his bail at $20,000 cash or $200,000 surety.
Surety basically means a guarantee from a bail bondsman.
Yeah, so that's a lot of money, right? Yeah. But then after he's indicted for the armed robbery, that bail amount just explodes. It goes up to $50,000 cash or $500,000 surety.
And for Brangen, that kind of money might as well have been $1 billion. It was simply out of reach, which meant...
he's stuck in jail.
Right. Before he's even had a chance to defend himself in court, he ends up spending over 3.5 years behind bars. And I think that's something we all need to really sit with for a second. This is someone who, under our system, is presumed innocent. But because they couldn't afford bail, they're locked up for years.
Mm.
Imagine the ripple effects of that. The impact on their life, their family, even just their ability to prepare a solid defense. It raises some serious questions about fairness.
Absolutely. And as if that wasn't enough, there's another twist in this whole saga. So Brangen actually gets found guilty at his first trial, but guess what? That conviction gets tossed out. A new trial was ordered because the prosecution, well, they made some serious mistakes. It was misconduct, plain and simple. But here's the part that's just mind-boggling. After this mistrial, the court goes right back to that same massive bail amount. The $50,000 cash or the $500,000 surety?
Almost like the system just hit the reset button despite this huge legal error. Makes you wonder, right, about how deeply ingrained these bail practices are.
For sure. And it puts into sharp focus the impossible situation so many defendants who can't afford bail find themselves in. Like you said, the foundation of our legal system is supposed to be this idea of presumed innocence. But in reality, just not having enough money can mean you're basically treated as guilty. By default. And as you pointed out in Brangen's case, we're not talking about a few weeks or even a few months. We're talking years. It's a really disturbing thought.
It really is. And this case, beyond the specific legal requirements it lays out, kind of signals this growing awareness that your wealth shouldn't dictate whether you're free or not while you wait for your trial. I mean, lengthy detention just because someone is poor, it's a huge disruption to their life. And honestly, it disproportionately affects those who are already marginalized.
100%. So over the course of the next year, Brangen tries 4 different times to get his bail lowered in the Superior Court. 4 times. And each time, it's a no-go. It's only then that the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court steps in. They take on his case as what they call an extraordinary appeal. And that this really sets the stage for the core question in front of the SJC. It's a question, by the way, that's super relevant to all of you studying law. Did the trial judge in this case violate Brangen's fundamental due process rights by not giving proper weight to his financial situation when they set that crazy high bail?
And now we're getting to the constitutional heart of this case. Both the 8th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution and the Massachusetts Declaration of Rights are crystal clear. Excessive bail is forbidden. But here's the thing. The word excessive, well, it's open to interpretation, right? So how do you actually apply that to someone who literally doesn't have the money to pay any amount of bail, no matter how reasonable it might seem to someone who's, you know, well off?
Yeah, I mean, it gets at the whole point of fairness, doesn't it? And in Brangen, the SJC was very clear. Judges have to factor in a defendant's financial situation when they're making a bail decision. Full stop. But they didn't stop there. And this is an important catch. They also said that judges aren't automatically required to set bail at a level the defendant can afford, especially if there are other concerns, you know, like a high risk that the person might take off and skip town.
Yeah, the court recognized that there are absolutely going to be situations where even if a defendant is broke, a certain bail amount might still be necessary to make sure they'll actually show up for their court dates. But, and this is a big but, they said, if setting bail that someone can't afford is going to lead to them being locked up for a long time before their trial, then the judge has to explain their reasoning very specifically and with solid evidence. They can't just throw out a number and call it a day.
So it's not about saying, hey, high bail is always wrong. It's about making sure there's a clear and justified reason behind it, especially when it basically turns into a sentence before the trial even happens.
Right.
It's about protecting those core due process rights that are, you know, the foundation of our justice system.
Exactly. And to really grasp why the SJC ruled the way they did, you have to understand their fundamental logic. They were basically saying, look, the only legitimate purpose of bail is to make sure a defendant shows up in court. That's it. And it's not, and this is key, it's not a tool for locking up someone just because you think they might be dangerous. If that's the concern, they're completely separate legal processes for that. Different rules, different standards of evidence.
It's a really important distinction, and the SJC was really clear about it. When a judge sets bail that a defendant just can't pay, it's not really bail anymore. It's what they called a de facto detention order.
Basically, it might be dressed up as a bail decision, but the result is the same as being held without bail. And that's a huge deal because under the law, that kind of de facto detention triggers a much higher level of scrutiny. The courts have to look at it much more closely to make sure someone's rights aren't being trampled on.
Right. And this leads us to what's now called the Brangen test.
Yeah.
Essentially a set of four things a judge in Massachusetts has to do in these situations. So when does this test kick in? Well, when two things are true, it's clear the defendant can't actually afford the bail that's been set. And because they can't afford it, they're probably going to be stuck in jail for a long time before their trial.
Exactly. So first, the judge has to clearly spell out the facts of the case that are relevant to their bail decision. This means no more vague pronouncements. They have to specifically explain why they landed on a particular bail amount.
Second, they have to explain their thought process. Mm-hmm. Like, why did they choose that specific number? And they need to show that they actually consider the defendant's financial situation as part of that decision-making process. It can't just be an afterthought.
Right. It's about transparency. And then third, they need to lay out exactly how they arrived at that bail amount. Was there a formula, a set of guidelines? Did they just pull it out of a hat? This pushes for a more logical and less arbitrary approach to setting bail.
And finally, they have to explain why they didn't go with less restrictive options. Could they have set a lower bail amount? What about non-financial conditions like, I don't know, regular check-ins or electronic monitoring? It forces the court to actively think about alternatives before they resort to just slapping a high cash bail on someone.
Exactly. It's about making sure they've really considered all the possibilities. And it's also important to remember that under Brangen, judges can't just use bail as a backdoor way to detain someone they think is dangerous. They have to follow the proper procedures for that which involve a formal dangerousness hearing. Totally different ballgame.
Different rules, different burden of proof. It's not interchangeable, and the SJC made that super clear. And another thing they emphasized was the need for ongoing review. It's not like a judge sets bail and then just washes their hands of the case. They have a responsibility to take another look if a defendant ends up sitting in jail for a long stretch. And when they do that review, they have to consider how long the person has been locked up, but also any new information that's come to light, maybe new evidence or changes in the defendant's circumstances. It's not a one-and-done situation.
So much more dynamic than it was before. So let's zoom out for a minute. What does Brangen mean for defendants in general, especially those who don't have a lot of money?
Well, it means that judges can't just set ridiculously high bail without backing it up with solid reasoning.
Right.
And for defense attorneys, it's a huge win. Now they've got ammo to challenge bail amounts that are obviously unaffordable. They can go back and really scrutinize the judge's reasoning, the facts they used to justify their decision. Did they really consider the client's financial situation? Did they even try to come up with less restrictive options? This case gives them a whole new way to fight for their client's rights.
And for you future lawyers, Brangen is like a crash course in how those big constitutional rights we talk about so much in school actually play out in the real world. It shows you how much power a judge has in the pretrial process and how important it is to make sure that power is used fairly and with a real understanding of the economic realities that people are facing.
Absolutely. And I think the key takeaway here is that thanks to Brangen, judges in Massachusetts have to be much more careful and transparent when setting bail, especially when that bail amount is basically going to guarantee someone will be stuck in jail for a long time before they've even had their day in court. It really raises the bar in terms of protecting the rights of defendants, especially those who don't have a lot of money.
It really does. And it puts this whole issue of bail reform right at the forefront of the conversation. Like, how does Brangen fit into the bigger picture of trying to create a more just and equitable legal system, one that doesn't punish people simply because they're poor?
And what are the practical challenges that come with actually putting the Brangen ruling into practice? Will we see pushback from judges? How will it affect the workload of prosecutors and defense attorneys? These are things you guys should definitely be thinking about as you move forward in your legal careers. Because honestly, it's not just about knowing the law, it's about how that law actually impacts real people, real lives.
For sure. Cases like Brangen really show that law is a living thing. It's constantly evolving. And part of your job as future lawyers is to not just learn the rules, but to really examine how those rules work in the real world. Because ultimately, the goal is to create a justice system that's fair and accessible to everyone.
Well said. And that's a wrap for our deep dive into Brangen v. Commonwealth. Keep those wheels turning, folks, and we'll catch you next time on The Deep Dive.
See you then.